Longtime Canadian marijuana advocate Mark Emery is now facing extradition and a prison sentence in the United States. Emery, a well-known figure in the legalization movement, has for years called for an end to harsh drug sentencing. Now Emery is on a cross-Canada farewell tour in an attempt to motivate youth to form a political force and change drug laws in this country. Now, Mark, what's the situation that you face with your extradition to the U.S. on drug-related charges?
Well, I could fight the extradition, but here's the difficulty. The Canadian government's never refused an extradition request from the United States. Like, if it was from China or Thailand or some so-called dictatorship, then I would have a good argument not to be extradited. But because the United States is a democracy and therefore they think, ergo, democracies don't torture or act in cruel ways, then they never say no to the United States. Also, the United States always has this great clout in the government of Canada. So my lawyer said, Mark, listen, if you oppose this, they're calling you like the number one drug lord, they're calling you one of the top 50 most wanted, they're crazy about you, it's beyond belief, they hate you with a passion that's all disproportionate because basically you're mouthy, you're political, and you're a threat to them, and you know they've even said that. So he said, they're offering this deal for 5 years. He said, if you oppose it, you might stay here another year or 2 years, but then they will give you 25, 50, because they're saying you're the worst, you're the biggest, you know, and all their mandatory minimums. And then he said, and if you get a penalty for the money laundering, and the money laundering is just the money we gave away. The crazy thing is, if I just kept all the money, it wouldn't be money laundering, but because I gave it away to everybody, it's money laundering. So, like, doing good work is like money laundering, right? Whereas if I'd have kept it, it wouldn't be money. So, anyway, so he's saying, if you get a financial penalty of, say, $500,000, you cannot get transferred back to Canada until you pay the penalty. And he says, and you don't have $10,000, let alone $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 or $1 million. Who knows what it could be if they say you're the biggest, right? And you did millions of dollars in business, they could give you a big fine. And then you're stuck there for, like, your whole life. And you'll never get out. He said, well, is this way, if we can convince the Canadian government to let you come back to be transferred, then maybe you can be out on day parole in 1 year and full parole in 2 years, and your wife can see you, and you're back, you know, in your own lifetime, right? He said, also, I don't have any really great arguments because they never let anyone not get extradited. He said, I would take this deal because that's the best thing for you and your wife. He said, otherwise, if you go to jail for 30 years, how is your wife going to feel, like knowing that she'll never see you for the rest of her life and that she'll be alone in this time? And she said, that's really hard, he said. You want to think about that before you decide you're going to fight it all the way. And so, you know, that's why this is happening.
Right, now this all stems from the sale of marijuana seeds on the internet.
Yeah. The most I have ever been convicted of or even accused of. I've never been accused of selling drugs or anything at all. I have been convicted of passing a joint. And I got 3 months in jail for passing one joint to a 22-year-old person. I've given away 0.5 gram of hash, and I got banned from the downtown of Vancouver for a year for that one, and jailed for many days. And I've been convicted of selling seeds and selling bongs and promoting bongs and promoting seeds, and that's it. I have never been convicted of anything else more. All my civil disobedience was about smoking marijuana, and many times I've not been convicted because I've been proven correct. Even though I've been jailed, I've been arrested 23 times for marijuana, jailed 17 times, raided 6 times, right? But convicted very rarely. I've even had $1 million worth of my stuff taken away, and most of that happened when I wasn't charged with anything. The police just took everything I had, and then you don't hear from them, and there's nothing you can do about it, right? So for me, I've had a lot of challenges, but very few convictions and very few accusations of any kind of serious behavior. I've never been convicted or accused of selling marijuana or selling drugs or manufacturing them. And even these seeds, they say I'm manufacturing and distributing marijuana via these seeds that I sent, right? I'm part of a conspiracy, they're saying, right? So, and yet they call me, the DEA went on 5 occasions on their press release saying, this Mark Emery, he used hundreds of thousands of dollars to fund legalization groups while they don't have money anymore, and Mark Emery and his legalization groups will suffer now, and Mark Emery and his propagandist magazine. They call my magazine a propagandist magazine. So, you know, they're using all this crazy inflamed language, so you can tell they're so angry with me and everything I've done. And it's, they never talk about any victims because there are no victims. We're the victim. The cannabis culture are the victim. So how can there be victims, right? The only victim is the pride of the U.S. Justice Department ideology under George Bush. But it's still being continued under President Obama. Even his new drug czar said, oh, legalization is not in our language, right? So, you know, the battle is continuing, and I hope my time in jail is short and because I want people to protest. You know, I'm trying to organize a rally around the world on my behalf on the Saturday before I'm due to be sentenced. And already, you know, there'll be rallies in London, England, Moscow, Amsterdam, it's in Montreal certainly, and places all over the world on my behalf to recognize my work on behalf of the cannabis culture that's impacted everywhere around the world, because we sent our money to many, many remote and desperate places to start their legalization movement and give them some encouragement and some wherewithal, like places like New Zealand or even Israel. You know, we were big backers of the Israeli Marijuana Party as a very good leader, Boaz Wachtel, and so we were always sponsoring. We even sponsored a peace conference between Israelis and Palestinians in 2006, right, at the University of Jerusalem, right? So we were using money even now to great effect to try and bring about change, peaceful, honest change, right? And so when you see the U.S. government is opposed to all the things we've done, you know, we gave $250,000 to a drug addiction clinic that I personally supervised and met all the addicts and lived with them and treated them and did miracles with them, working with ibogaine hydrochloride, a remarkable extraction from an African plant that comes from Cameroon and Gabon, right? We paid for the Supreme Court of Canada challenge to the marijuana laws in 2003, where we lost 6-3 and the 6 Anglophone judges voted against us, and the three Francophone judges voted for us. So it's a very interesting thing that Louise Arbour and the other two Francophone judges wanted to legalize marijuana. So it makes you wonder that if we had an independent Quebec, would we have legal cannabis? That's a very good question, right? Because I don't think the opposition to legalizing cannabis is very great in Quebec, like it is perhaps in other places.
Right. Now, you said the U.S. authorities have labeled you the number one target, most wanted person in Canada. Is it because you're such an outspoken advocate for marijuana and drug reform laws?
Well, it must be, because I still shake hands with politicians every day and famous people every day, and people haven't stopped being my friend or introducing themselves. I know almost every politician to some degree in this country and met them all, and I'm still on the same terms, so no one thinks of me in that way, right? It's all this outrageous language used by the DEA and the Justice Department and the head of Karen Tandy in order to demonize me, but it has the effect of backfiring. It's so outrageous. I'm just a bookseller who wanted a peaceful revolution. And listen, what kind of revolution is it? It's overgrowing the government. Well, it's the perfect revolution that uses peace and honesty and transparency and a plant to forward a revolutionary idea that we should be treated with respect and civility and not hunted down like animals, all because we believe in this plant. Like, what we're asking for is incredibly reasonable. We're doing it non-violently. We're doing it with respect and civility. We're trying to perpetuate our plant and keep it growing, because we need more plants in the world. Everything we're doing is honorable, and we're met with spite and resistance and propaganda and lies. So, you know, we are a very sacred movement of people who are persecuted, but we need people to work harder, because I think people can, in the modern era, are being too comfortable. You know, they're having too much fun, and life is so nice in a big city like Montreal, and we're not thinking about the people who are suffering, we might be them soon enough. You know, the winds change politically very quickly, and if we turn our back, things can change in a negative way very fast. Like, if Bill C-15 passes, all of a sudden people will be saying, wow, the jails are all full now, the inmates are rioting, everybody's much more violence in the prisons because they're crowded, and now we have to build more prisons, and then the conservatives will say, well, maybe we should have the private prison industry now, and because that's who they get their support from, and their funding. And so then we see an Americanization of Quebec as well as Canada, which is outrageous, right? That's ridiculous. So, I mean, Canada is a much better example to the world than the United States. We have nothing to learn from the United States. They're an incarceration state. They jail 25% of the world's inmates in a country that has only 5% of the population. They're not a good place to emulate. There's nothing we can learn from the U.S. Their economy is collapsing. Their way of life is disintegrating, and it's dishonest, right? And so I think Canada has the potential to be the greatest place on earth, and Quebec has the potential, because we're so well integrated here. Montreal and Toronto and Canada, we have more immigrants and more people here from all over the world than any other place on earth. You know, you go to Japan, they're all Japanese. You go to China, they're all Chinese. In Canada, everybody's from everywhere. And so we have the greatest potential to get along and exploit these great differences to our mutual benefit, whether it's in restaurants or in creativity or thinking or arts. You know, we all benefit by that. So once we end cannabis prohibition and everybody's allowed to enlighten themselves and we can buy advertising, because it's important that we buy advertising so we can point out that marijuana is better for you scarier than these antidepressants. So we should have a joint or a bottle of pills, right? And point out that the joint is much better for you. Or joint in the Jack Daniels. And we can list all the things that are going to happen to you if you smoke the joint. No Alzheimer's, no cancer. You get an enlightened mind, great music. Over here with the alcohol, domestic violence, bank robberies, all the things that come from alcohol. And you could advertise effectively so that more and more people smoke marijuana and fewer people think that alcohol or antidepressants or prescription drugs or these bad foods or sugars are good alternatives. We should be advertising against those things. We should say smoke weed, not alcohol, or smoke weed instead of antidepressants, or stop eating crap. You know, when you get the munchies, eat this. You know, and starting to associate ourselves with healthy, idealistic goals, and that the things that are all legal are correctly identified as death-dealing things. Cars will kill you, guns will kill you. These are all legal. They're killing people like crazy, right? So once we're allowed to legally advertise marijuana, which you can't do now, right? Nobody will let you buy an ad that says good things about marijuana. You can only buy government propaganda. The government can buy all the ads they want that say marijuana is a terrible, evil thing, but we cannot buy an ad pointing out the truth, right? It used to be you couldn't even have a book or magazine about the truth, but now you still cannot buy an advertisement that has the truth. So we have a lot of things to overcome, and we have many duties for everyone in our movement to overcome. We have 5 to 7 million people smoking marijuana, and yet what are they doing? They're not doing enough because we still don't have one member of parliament who's speaking on our behalf. Libby Davies is very good, and Bill Sixsay of the NDP, and occasionally, but you know, even people from Papineau, like Justin Trudeau, I have smoked marijuana with him on many occasions, right? In Vancouver and Toronto, and now he votes for Bill C-50 in the parliament. The man is a teacher. Before he was in parliament, he's a teacher of young people, and now he's voted for a law that will put more young people in jail. What kind of man did he become? What has happened to him? Right? So we have to remind him that these things are bad for children, bad for young people. It's hypocritical of him to have smoked marijuana to vote for laws like this. And you can tell him that Mark Emery said he smoked with you, and now you're voting for Bill C-15. What is all that? Your father wouldn't even have voted for such a thing, right? And his father smoked hash, and Justin told me his father was fine with marijuana legalization. So what happened to his son? You know, and so many questions need to be asked, because many people in government are drunks. But it's no problem, right? Like my premier of British Columbia, Gordon Campbell, convicted drunk driver, potentially dangerous to people, and yet he's still the premier. Ralph Klein, a very famous, well-known Canadian drunk, premier of Alberta, no problem. John A. Macdonald, founder of this country, big whiskey nose, they call him. You know, big drunk, right? Stephen Harper said the reason he has never smoked marijuana, when he was asked, why have you ever smoked marijuana, he says, no, I was offered a joint once, but I was too drunk to take it. The prime minister was too drunk to take it. So we're run by drunks, and drunks typically are hating people. They're angry people. You know, they burst into temper. They lose it easy. And so, you know, I don't trust our country drunks, and that's why we have nobody speaking on our behalf, because they stopped smoking weed. Because here's what happened. When you smoke weed, you cannot really be a powerful person over others by force. It goes against what you believe. But as soon as you stop smoking marijuana and look for another new philosophy, or a philosophy of power or domination, like you're becoming a parent now, so you have to tell the kids what to do, or you're becoming a teacher, you have to tell them what to do, or you're a politician, you have to tell the masses what to do, and the policeman is telling people what to do, and the politician and government are telling people how they're going to live, right? When you leave the one love, one world philosophy of cannabis, and you decide to go for power or influence or domination, then you adopt an evil agenda that is all about control. And so that's who's attracted to government. People who drink to forget how bad a person they are and the bad things they are doing and the worthless lives they're leading. And so they drink to make themselves forget. But because they couldn't do that if they were pot smokers. They could not go and do that day to day. So anyway, many things we need to address in our world, and we certainly need the cannabis culture, the converted, the people who already agree with us, the people who are already smoking. It's important to convert new people, get more people high, and get them experience with marijuana, but it's really important to motivate the people who already feel as we do to get out and do something in the political landscape.
Now, right now, you're in the middle of a cross-Canada speaking tour.
Yes.
What's the objective?
Well, this was the 19th city of the 30-city tour, and basically explaining that I'll be going to jail in a U.S. federal prison, and I would like to help them to help me get transferred back to Canada, right? That's important, because it used to be automatic under the previous Liberal government, but now with the Conservative government, they're not taking weed prisoners back. They took Conrad Black's associates back, but the weed prisoners are leaving in the United States because they say they will repeat offend, so they're not wanting them back, right? So every Canadian has a right to be repatriated back to a Canadian jail as part of our constitutional rights of mobility. We have a right to be in Canada if it's possible. So hopefully the government of the Conservative government will be defeated soon. It's important we have an election right away. Stephen Harper is telling people that Canadians don't want an election. I want an election immediately, and so do many Canadians. We want to get rid of him. Right, the people who want to get rid of him, and that is the big majority, 68% of this country, want to get rid of him. We want an election. So I think we need to make sure that the cannabis culture participates in the election. Our big problem as a culture is we are skeptical and cynical, and we don't believe politics makes a good difference, where we see all the bad examples. But out of self-defense and self-preservation, we have to be involved with politics. We have to call our member of parliament. We have to make meetings with them. We have to write them letters and badger them and remind them over and over again that prohibition is wrong for all Canadians, and it's certainly going to create more crime, right? And so we have to be vigilant. We have to get up to vote. Most young people don't vote, and most people in the cannabis culture don't vote. So we have to change that. My wife, she runs for the Green Party of Canada in Vancouver South, and she's the policing critic for the Green Party of British Columbia. And so she's very, very involved with that, and I hope she can be a good example to young people, young women too, that they have to get involved in parliament and run as a candidate and find out how. In fact, you'll learn if you get close to it. It's very dirty, and it's very bad, and people vote for the silliest of reasons and the stupidest of reasons, and that a lot of it is very, very negative, and it's hard to keep your idealism in such an environment, but it's absolutely necessary nonetheless for our self-preservation that we participate as full partners in the political process, or we will be marginalized there even more so than we are now.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
All right.